President said, and there are pictures of people that presumably either
with pants down to their, you know, either short ones down to their jaw, down to their chest, being led into captivity by Mitra. I've also seen that on in Persepolis, the ruins where the palaces and so forth of Ahasuerus. There are descriptions and carvings of all sorts of delegations. Hellenic chariot keeper had Paeus, Finland's hanging in Tiberias, a Libyan, Syrian, they had Paeus.
I think in Afghanistan today they still have tribes which have Paeus.
Well, those are Pashtuns. They're presumably Jews that were assimilated or forced into conversions.
Yeah, but they don't say that.
Well, they do. Many of them
they do.
Yeah. Some
what?
Don't, some do.
Say what?
They have many divisions of families with the names that parallel the Shvatim. And also, I've heard from a friend who's researched this kind of thing, was in Yerushalayim Zalevi, that Tzitzis as well. He said, Chittites were Tzitzis. It was a status symbol. Do you want any information on this kind of phenomenon, these things that Tzitzis, Peis, predates Matan Torah?
We don't have any information on that.
I can give you
in other words, there's archaeological evidence that's very interesting, and maybe we can take that into account. But what really, we have to distinguish between custom and halacha. I mean, it could have been customary to have payas, and it could have been maybe based even on Kabbalah or mystical reasons, but it's not necessarily halachically required. And therefore, in countries where less emphasis was placed on Kabbalah, they certainly would not have abided by that. Even in countries where emphasis was placed on Kabbalah to some extent, like Italy, they obviously didn't feel themselves bound by that specific Kabbalistic practice.
And is there possibly, is it really reasonable that there's a that there's a connection between the fact of Paeus and what we see seems to be a clear parallel to that in mitzvah, not destroying the hair at the corners of your head?
And what about the Jews?
Did God possibly have that in mind when he wanted to institute it as an actual practice for some reason? Is it reasonable to say, possibly, that God had that in mind? He said, do not destroy the hair of this, because it seems coincidental that there would be these things.
Yeah, but because I don't think God, my assumption is that God would not allow the majority of the Jewish people to commit such a gross error. If God really wanted us to have payas, then I don't believe he would have allowed such a large section of Jews not to have payas. By the way, it's important to know, a lot of people have payas today, it's because it's cool. my kids, well, several my... What? No, I don't want to like behind the ears. Because my kids, when they were growing up, a couple of them in elementary school, they started growing payas. They don't have them anymore. Why? Because it was cool. The cool, other kids had payas, so it became a status symbol. So people started wearing payas. Some people then stuck with them. Some people didn't. So I don't think that in Lithuania, then the only people who are considered extremely pious grew payas. Even then, not sometimes more. Sometimes see a picture of the Netziv. Anybody see a picture of the Netziv?
Mm-hmm.
So he has real long payas, but he's an exception. Some of them had payas, a little bit like a bulge or something, but not to full extent. So we're assuming baseline halacha that it's not required. It's perhaps some sort of form of hidur of glorifying the mitzvah to do it. Yeah.
From what source do we get the idea that it is not allowed to shave one's beard with a blade?
The Chazal say that's what it means, that you should not destroy the hair of your face. It's referring to lasers.
Yeah, but I mean, where do we get that from?
What?
To the laser, that'd
be okay. If it's the laser, it should be okay, yeah.
So, I mean, where do we get that from? We get that from Mishnah or Torah?
The Mishnah.
Along the
Parsha. It doesn't say the word tar. It doesn't say the word laser.
Sometimes it's special of your
Mishnah falls from the Parsha.
Yeah, the Mishnah tells us that it's a razor. The Parsha says don't destroy the hair of your beard.
Right.
It doesn't say how don't destroy it. So the Mishnah says don't destroy it means don't use a razor. You can use a scissors, use a chisel, don't use a razor.
Chisel.
What about the bomb blade? I know that nowadays there's a blade, like the gelatin blade, has three layers.
Ah!
What if just one layer?
So, at the contrary, the three layers would be more mutter. There was a non-Orthodox rabbi in America about 80 years ago.
That's
the
one
that
outside 80 years ago?
Yeah, sure. Who contended that a safety razor is not forbidden by the Torah.
Because he has things.
What do you think?
Yeah. Skin.
Of course it's forbidden by the Torah. But that would make, you know, that type of, the single blade razor is the classic razor. That for sure is forbidden.
Why? If three is, I understand, but what's wrong with one?
Yeah.
One is like not
sharp. No, on the contrary, that's what it's so sharp that it cuts your hair. In and of itself, you don't need an extra blade.
One blade?
Yeah,
sharp. Sure. Better than three?
Sharp enough, yeah.
Well, it's not sharp enough. I think
you're
talking about the safety blades.
I don't think safety blades. You know, if you ever see, go to a barbershop, not if we have a monthly, just from barbershop. And you watch people getting
straight
razor, yeah.
They're clean, really clean.
No, that is. My question, Navi, we were learning in class that with the Shimshon, so there was an angel that came to his parents, and there was a question whether he was an angel or a Navi. So according to Rabbah, he was really Ben Cohen. So then how does, if according to that interpretation, how does he jump into the fire?
Absolution.
But any way of how he did it, or we just assume that he just lied to them and...
No, he walked, I don't know, maybe he walked through the fire, but in any...
So
that would be scared him somehow. But it wasn't necessary. Of course, he didn't go up in the fire, according to Rabbah.
Rabbah,
by the way, is a super rationalist. You know, he does not like taking anything as being mystical that he doesn't have to.
Big skeptic.
Yeah, but a lot of things in Torah, now that we take that as like, Shina, for instance, right? Yeah, we'll look for it. You know, it's there, but it's in a way mystical. Because
what's there?
It's not tangible. Say Shina, right? Shina is upon the guy or the person, right? So it's in a way mystical because the person is not tangible.
What way is it not mystical?
It. Right, so I'm saying, how would that rabbi interpret it, or Rabbah interpret it as rational? It's rational, it's like not seen.
The Rambam holds that a person's holiness is a function of his intellect.
Okay, fine. So if I'm a very smart, intelligent person, I do a verus, okay. So
then you're intellectually inferior.
What does that mean?
The Rambam holds that somebody who's completely rational will never do an averus.
A lot of philosophers are very rational people, but I'm sure you
so that's a flaw in their philosophy, in their philosophizing. You have a Chazal say, "Ein adam chayde," a person doesn't sin, "Elen kein nichnas bo ruach shtus," unless there enters him a spirit of shtus, of stupidity.
So
what does that mean? According to the Rambam, it's very simple. Rambam, the only way you can sin is but if you don't think. A thinker can never sin. Because Ramos, all the Torah is rational. It makes sense.
So how do you suppose a philosopher should get to understand how, why he should fast on Yom Kippur?
What?
How a philosopher should get to the point to understand that he should not eat on Yom Kippur?
It's rational to believe that God gave the Torah Mount Sinai. Once he said gave the Torah, then you accept...
No, for them, those don't follow the way. For them, it's all natural selection.
Yeah, but that also is a intellectual flaw.
Or the paraduma.
Yeah,
I was just thinking.
What? There's
a lot of things for there.
Natural selection is silly.
I don't know. While arguing in our shul a week ago, Dr. Lutenberg, for months, he was arguing around the guys there. And he was proving to him how natural selection is actually occurring.
How was he proving it?
Whatever he was saying was very convincing.
No, as I want to hear.
Yeah.
It's on the video.
Like the Lutenberg was
Who's
about Dr. Lutenberg.
You don't know Mike PhD in microbiology, and he has his own company that stuff for medicine. So he's a microbiologist. He says if you break down a molecule, you have like different enzymes, and these enzymes make up DNA molecules. So if a single one of these strands goes off wrong, then it's not just it's going to work bad, this molecule. It's not going to work at all.
Right.
And if that gets affected, the whole system gets affected.
Yeah.
So mathematically, they did that calculation for this to happen on its own, it would take trillions and trillions of years.
Right.
And so no evolutionists will ever say that the world is trillions of years old. They'll say it's So natural selection can't explain certain things, but it can explain the really, what they call irreducibly complex system.
But he just said it
right,
can.
Right, no. So the guy that was an number guy, who was in the audience very quietly.
Were you there?
Yeah. And then he started talking, you know. He's like, well,
he wasn't bothering you. He wasn't really saying anything.
There are other things that work without those, that formula he explained, meaning natural selection
yeah.
formula. Like, the thing is just go on its way. They have to have a pattern where one thing doesn't work, the whole thing just shuts down. But like a body, say, without the arm, it still operates, right? That was the argument that there are things that operate without one part working. You know, that would be like.
Yeah, but he was. That's what we were saying, irreducibly complex systems, like your eye and certain parts of the body,
right.
They're irreducibly complex. That means
can't
the blood,
have half an eye.
If it doesn't work, the whole system doesn't work. There are certain things that could work by natural selection, but not the irreducibly complex systems.
But what you're talking about is going from something that is inanimate to animate. And that's what he's saying is not possible. You have dead tissue and you make that into live tissue, this is not possible.
That's not the theory of natural selection.
Right, but that's what he was talking about. about how it's so mathematically impossible for all these random molecules just to have to come together and have them live.
I happen to read a lot of secular words.
What?
I happen to read a lot of secular words.
That's good.
So one thing that I read is that it's happened so that the letters that we right now have in our Sefer Torahs are not the ones that were actually written by Matanik. The different forms.
That's the machloke between the Bavli and Yerushalmi.
That's true.
Yerushalmi says it.
What do you call that? Natural script. So why do we have that short script?
Ancient Hebrew script. Because the rabbi, according to Yerushalmi?
I don't know.
Because the rabbi determined that this is better.
So now that's not the original Torah script.
You can't do that.
That's sure, right?
What do you mean you can't do that? They did it.
You can't do that because
according to Bible they did.
That's changing the
right,
original.
Right, according to Bible they did.
That's changing the original. The original should be that way. It should be kept that way. Why change that?
So does that make any sense?
They decided, probably based on prophecy, because they just what time they decided there's still prophecy in the world that this is superior and this is, should be used instead.
No.
But nobody knows where it came from, Kav Ashurim. It's a very strange thing. So it seems the rabbis decided this is, according to Yerushalmi, this is the way we should do it, and the secrets of the Torah will be much more accessible if we use this code.
Wow.
Not to me and you, but for Rabbi Akiva. For Rabbi Akiva!
But what about the crowd?
Well, you think the Torah was created for us morons?
So wait, the Sefer Torah we're right now with all these kinds of stuff. There's another real letters, right? So that's not able to.
According to the Yerushalmi.
There's another real letters.
Right.
So what's the point of those crowns?
They have their codes. So they keep a new the code.
Did you ever write it down?
No. Although there is a work called Osios the Rabbi Akiva, which is a Braisa, which actually does have some explanations of the letters. Yeah, Yossi's
so
really patiently.
In Shoftim, how could that woman have done one of the three things that you're not supposed to do under any circumstances?
Should they accept with that?
You're not supposed to. Yeah, we didn't get there yet, actually. I don't know if we're ever going to get there. It's next possible, but we're never, 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 never get there. There is a discussion in the Gemara, and it seems that you're not supposed to do these averas under any circumstances as an individual. But to save the community, perhaps it can be permitted.
So you can bow down before an idol if needed.
Perhaps.
Well, rabbi, does not want to.
What does it mean?
Perhaps.
I mean, who's on both sides? I mean, who's saying yes? Who's saying no?
There are different rabbis. Everything in this world is an argument. So there's an argument between different rabbis.
Now,
come on.
I heard that. And I know that you not just bow down to an idol. If you have to die, even if you have to die, you don't.
If you have to die.
Wait.
But the question is, you can save other people.
Right, so in a case with the Hannah and seven sons, they all died, what? They died because...
They all died individually.
Right, but because they were forced to bow down to the idol.
Each one.
Right, each
right,
one.
So they died because he was a Shem. They don't want to, like...
Fine.
Okay. They don't want to kill the rest of the people. So now they said, either you bow down, we'll kill a million people over there.
Oh.
That was their thing after...
Yeah.
But there's no sin if you do actually bow down, is there? There is, because Rambam says you really don't have enough. Like Tzami says, I'll kill
you. We don't put you to death, but you did sin.
You didn't do the Kiddush
Hashem. No, you didn't sin. You didn't have Avera. But the Avera doesn't necessarily make you subject to capital punishment as you normally would.
Is it really bad? Or
I think that's really bad.
But you were pressured.
Okay, so you could do tshuva. That's what Rambam writes in Igeres Taimon in his letter to Yemen. He says it's really bad what you did, but you could do tshuva.
It says
that applies to any time there's an army camp.
A what?
An army camp. The laws about army camps, how to conduct oneself in war. Yeah. Have you been here before?
That's
the Rambam view of what he
called
the talking about. What? The prophecy, right? The talking snake?
Yeah,
it's
gracious.
How do we view that? The Rambam would say that is, he has two ways of dealing with that. One of them is to say that it's a metaphor for the Yetzer Hara. But Chazal seemed to hold, and there's no reason to assume the Rambam doesn't hold this way, is that there was an actual creature which was somewhere between man and animal, and that was the snake. And he was demoted to full animal status after the sin.
Is that most unfortunate?
No, but that's what Chazal say.
The animal was most unfortunate by that.
Most unfortunate, why? Why they don't hold that way?
How the most unfortunate?
Oh, they hold that this was a crystallization of the Yetzer Hara.
So
of the statement. It's both. In other words, the snake was, there was, according to most commentaries, it was a real snake. But the snake was not really a snake. The snake was really the sentient creature, i.e., the Satan taking on the form of the snake.
No, because after
you get that?
Yeah, sure.
After the sin, it
says, I don't believe you. What's the matter?
I just hear like a lot of different views lately. Like a lot of people say, because you know, like, certain, you know, people who are bunch of believe a lot of like God is all metaphors, like nothing's supposed to be literally. And then they push us to, you know, so much now too.
Are you into Mark Shapiro?
No, not at all.
But you know who Mark Shapiro is.
I have no idea.
Oh. So where are you getting this from? There is a sheet that if you go do a web search, you'll find that I've debated this online several times, this issue.
You debate online?
Of course, all the time. Not as much as I used to.
I want to hear that.
But the internet's not there. How can you do that?
No, these are not big throws. So these are written debates. So,
Oh, yeah, like the guy on the Lower East Side that you told us?
Yeah, I was in Chicago. No, Lower East Side.
Oh, I was in Chicago?
There are Mefarshim, there are Rishonim who say that the snake that didn't even exist is a living metaphor. In fact, it was spiritual. But that's as far as they go. There's nobody who takes no legitimate source which takes the entire episode and turns it into a metaphorical one. In fact, the Rashba said that anybody who does that is heretical. So you can take parts, and the Rambam would do that. He would take parts of episodes and say they're metaphorical. The classic example being
the donkey,
right? That the donkey didn't speak. Bilam had a vision of the donkey speaking. Now, that's not necessarily a metaphor. You can call it something else. I like calling that, you know, so to speak, virtual reality. Meaning, he was in his reality, which he perceived internally, the donkey was speaking.
Did he
apply it to the split of the people? No. Well, they obviously got to the other side in that case.
They applied it to... The half circle.
They got to somewhere. they applied it to Avram seeing the three angels,
yeah,
and Yaakov fighting with the three angels. But it says that those were not actual, you know, if you would have gone there and looked at Yaakov fighting with the angel, who seems to look
he's fighting himself.
Yeah, look at his face. But you know, and you wouldn't have seen anyway. What?
Did he have a beard when he fought? Yeah.
Maybe the angel pulled his beard. Yeah, hi.
Who's Mark Shapiro?
Mark?
He wants to get
Well, do a web search on Mark Shapiro. Mark Shapiro is one of the spokespeople, I guess, for academia, Orthodox academics.
So what's wrong with that?
What?
What's wrong with that?
The Orthodox academics like being avant-garde. They like being, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Checking out the boundaries. No.
Mm-hmm.
On the contrary, the exact opposite.
They like what?
They like pushing the envelope.
They're
pushing the envelope.
What
was it's the academic Orthodox.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm getting a problem with it.
Well, for example, Mark Shapiro believes that the entire Chumash to Lech Lecha is not necessarily, never necessarily took place.
So what's the problem with that? Meaning what? The only reason...
How do we know that? How do we know what's interesting before Lech Lecha and after Lech Lecha?
I'm just saying.
So why?
I just asked you a question, though, didn't I?
Okay, but I don't see the difference. I mean, how would that change anything? Let's say it is. Were they factual or not factual? How does that change anything?
Why should I believe in anything then?
Because you have to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't think you have to believe in it.
What?
You have to believe that Moshe Rabbeinu, that we heard God speak to us. We heard that we had a revelation, so we have to believe in it. And then where Moshe Rabbeinu writes, that's what we and that's what happened. I mean,
if I don't believe that the other stories in Torah, why should I believe that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah?
I can't give you the lecture right now.
Have
you ever read
Rabbi? Can't you just answer my question?
Lawrence Kellerman. He writes.
I know what Lawrence Kellerman writes. It's very good. I'm not debating that.
Well,
I'm saying from Mark Shapiro's viewpoint.
From a rational viewpoint, you can't really reject it from the way he brings it down.
So right. So there was no Abraham. There was no Yitzhak. There was no Yaakov.
But you have to believe in Moshe. I mean,
and you believe that Moshe Rabbeinu made up races and gave
the
Jewish people.
What?
I
don't see how that changes the halacha.
What do you mean changes the halacha? It undermines our emuna. Do you believe there was an Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob?
It wouldn't be out of change anything.
I would like to see how that would change something. I really don't.
So much of our religion seems to when Chazal say that chakras correspond to Avraham Avinu. So what were they? They were just joking?
That means nothing. I mean, it does. They're just giving you a source of where it might come from. But I still have to pray. That
they're fooling
us. No,
right.
I'm saying if that should be the reason to praying is because you have to pray because that's what the guy expects from you, I would still have to pray. I mean, just because it's Abraham and not a reason in itself, you have to pray so show your dependency on God. I still have to pray.
So true.
Well, regardless of what they told God, I'm praying because Abraham needs to do something.
Well, you wouldn't be annoyed if you found out that the Gemara was tricking you. I'd be pretty annoyed about that.
Why
is
he
jumping from
what?
What in the Old Testament it says about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob?
No! We're assuming right now that if you can say things are metaphors, then say Abraham and Yitzhak were metaphors.
There was an alchemical metaphor then because he got his 7 years from Avarishon, but if there was no Avarishon, there would be no Devonel, possibly.
You could start undermining selectively anything you want in Jewish history.
It seems like there's too many things that wasn't real. There's too many things that came afterwards that are just too bounded after to not be real. There's too much. I don't know how. I mean, just Mark guy's saying just trying to get like a rouse out somewhere, like, oh yeah, this didn't happen. And that's what I got over here. This guy dead serious about it. He actually believes what he's doing.
I can't tell. He certainly certainly has fun.
But they just sources that he relies on. He just does on his own.
Science.
No, besides science. I don't know. Science is an awful.
There is one obscure Rishon who was put into Kairon who said that.
Who was put into what?
Kairon, excommunicated.
For saying what?
That Adam, that the whole episode, that the Avraham and Yitzhak metaphors, that Adam and Chava. Adam and Eve are metaphors.
They know people can be excommunicated.
Sure.
In Judaism.
Oh, yeah.
Rabbi,
well, it's not technically excommunicated because we don't have a concept of communion. Right? We don't give out the wafer and the wine. But it, the
well,
term is used.
What would you call it in Judaism? In Judaism?
You call it a cheren.
Cheren?
Yeah. The Arabs also use the word haram. Something which is haram in Arabic means forbidden. So this person is now haram. He's forbidden.
So they are forbidden from interacting with the community.
Is that what you
mean?
What?
Community.
I'll
think that's question. Bring back the earlier subject. Is there any model to the somebody who's going to be considered a Sephardic or Ashkenazic or Chassidic one? Is that the color of doesn't work here?
A Rebbe?
I mean, a Gadol. Anyone who's considered a Posseh Hador, Gadol Hador, or any kind of universally recognized, respected authority?
Perhaps not, but what does that prove?
No, it's not on proving it. I'm wondering about the actual kind of tachlis effect of beards of the Jewish custom versus what the masculine introduced in large. It seems like after the Haskalah, which was like a spiritual holocaust, beards became kind of the symbol of being religious to be discarded. But if they had no real import, and I realized in the Sephardic world it was not as widespread, you see a lot of Kinshim and Hachamim, but isn't the concept of the beard throughout the ages linked with the fidelity to the Torah law? Isn't that
it could be sociologically, not halachically. Does that help at all?
Well, would it be accurate to say that in some laws, that obviously there's no middle ground. You either take a Makel approach or a Machmir approach, like with brachos. If you're going to repeat a bracha, then you're treating Hashem's name in a Makel way, but you're being Machmir, and we don't pass it like that, obviously. So there are those cases, but there are other. Is it possible to say that there are other mitzvos where Hashem allowed it? He didn't allow just a linear, one way or the other approach, but he gave a sort of playing field, gave parameters. If you can do this, you can shave your beard off all the way with a kosher shaver, if there's such a thing, or you can grow it and never touch a wild hair in your life. But within that, I want to see how you perform. I want to see where your leaning is, your loyalties are, and that's where, is that possibly why Hashem gives us such a spectrum of possibilities within
the... It's possible. The Gemara says, the Yerushalmi says, that when God gave the Torah to Moshe, he showed him 49 ways on each halacha to say Tomei, impure, 49 ways to say Torah, 49 ways to say forbidden, 49 ways to say permitted, 49 ways to say etc., etc. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he said, listen, if we have all these options, how are we supposed to know what to do? So Hashem said, the sages in each and every generation will decide. They'll select it. Not
the sages of today, generally speaking, they don't tell everybody, obviously, thou shalt wear beards, but as an example, they all wear beards.
But maybe because they're sages, they have beards.
So maybe they're trying to, maybe, would you say it's possible that they're doing it because that's considered ideal?
It could be, but you have to ask them.
There's another example of a case where it would seem that somebody's out of line, and for all intents and purposes, they were considered way out of line, but they technically did nothing wrong. Al pi halacha, David Hamelach and Bathsheba.
No, I don't like the analogy.
Well, I don't like the fact that people say technically he was okay to do that. But the halachic idea is that because of the pasuk and tell about how I sinned against you alone, Hashem, then they derive that Uriah was outlined for not obeying.
No, of course, in that case, of course, King David sinned.
Yeah, well, but I think even though halachically speaking, as king, he could do what he did. It was still.
Anybody says he sinned with a married woman is mistaken, because she was divorced on a technicality. But he still did a very bad thing. Right?
But
what's wrong with that?
What do you mean? What's wrong with that? He's engaging in licentious activity on a whim with somebody who should be married to somebody else, even technically they're not right now.
Technically, off the halacha, as Chazal go at length to explain, he was not breaking law.
They even said he should have killed Uriah himself because the Ammonites had an idol on their swords and
he,
so forth.
Yeah, but he did a sin. If nothing else, he made a chilul Hashem.
That's the thing. It was robbing Hashem.
Chilul Hashem. That's created God's name.
But that's the point. There are things that are within halakhic boundaries that technically, we can always argue one way or the other, are correct, but in reality, in tachlis, you know, here and now, they're not. They're chilul Hashem, like you said. I mean, that's an extreme analogy.
Yeah, so I it's pretty extreme to draw analogies between that and beard.
But the concept, nonetheless, is that there can be halakhic boundaries where you can operate within that space. Do whatever you want, you're halakhically okay, but some things are more or less pleasing to Hashem than others.
Is God more pleased if you wear a white shirt?
I don't know. There's no halakhic tradition or no Jewish tradition per se, unless it's just a sociological thing. Wearing a white shirt.
Right. So why? Why not classify beard the same way?
Because isn't the beard more closely dealt with in halacha?
Okay, but in a broad category.
There's nowhere that says about. I mean, I don't have any particulars. The white shirt. You know, I don't feel like I have to wear a white shirt. I like it because of what it means. Like you said, the kippah last night, or the other night, you said kippah is a custom, but you take it off, and because of all it means.
Right, but that's mostly sociological, not halachic.
So the beard would be like the kippah in your kippah.
Right.
Kippah. Yarmulke.
Confirm or deny.
What?
Confirm or deny that shagels were only allowed because about 50 years or so. The women in Hollywood
sort of
stopped covering
their
head completely.
Absolutely denied. Look back at pictures of women in the 1800s, they're already wearing shekels.
So shekels, why? Okay, so shekels are fine throughout. They
didn't
take care of that then.
They cut people's hair, use other people's hair.
Is it rumored that some of the rabbis back in Europe, their wives didn't
cover? That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Lithuania, people didn't do the people didn't cover women, lots of women didn't cover their hair.
That's it.
Why?
What?
Just from a time.
Why?
Yeah.
No answer.
Every mitzvah has a mazel, it looks. Some mitzvahs are lucky, and some mitzvahs are unlucky. And in the advent of assimilation and acculturation, so the mitzvah of covering hair fell by the wayside.
Now, let's
just. It's especially because women back in the old days got a very lousy Jewish education. And what happened in Lithuania and Poland to a lesser extent is that the women had very good secular educations and very poor Jewish education. So therefore, they felt more at home in the secular world than the Jewish world. And therefore, the mores were much more secular.
Mores?
Yeah, the norms in the community.
The norms.
You said about denying any part of history. Let's say someone denies the Holocaust or denies the
He is an idiot.
Have you read the letter? It's called Letter to a Rabbi by Naftali with a Z last name. No? Can I sit down to show it to you? Because he has some valid argument, I could say. Quote Gemara, Rambam and stuff.
About and what?
But first of all, Rambam, he argues about the timing of Shabbat, how the timing of Shkia is actually different. According to him, it's wrong. And so he shows all the proofs and stuff. And
okay.
Can I bring it to the center with you?
Sure.
Some of the arguments I found very legit.
Sure. Okay, I think once more we successfully avoided learning Nach.
We did go over at least a little bit. Wait, wasn't that, since it was written in the Torah, a sin done in the public eye and therefore Chayav, should be Chayav for the death penalty?
By King David?
No, the woman in Shoftim. I forgot her name. But it was done pretty publicly, I'd say, if it was written in the Torah. Can she say
no.
That's not what Rabbah means by Rabbah Abim? Okay.
She just was not.